98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Cardinals GM Steve Keim.
Keim time.
With Burns and Gambo. Presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford.
It's the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station. Every Friday at 3 o'clock going into a weekend of Cardinals action. We get the pleasure of talking with the general manager of the Cardinals, Steve Keim, who joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Good afternoon, Steve. How you doing today? Congrats on the win in week one.
Doing good, man. Appreciate it. And looking forward to a big game this Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. So many positives to go over in that win over Tennessee, and we'll get to a lot of them. But I want to ask you about the performance of Chandler Jones. He was very dominant with the five sacks. And then this week he spoke to the media, and he did say that he did request a trade. And when people asked him about it, he said, ask Steve. So you're here. Well, ask Steve. When did Chandler Jones come to you and request a trade, and what was your initial thought about that?
I appreciate the question. I mean, I would say the one thing, and I've always sort of dealt with business this way, is any conversation with our players and their specific agents remains confidential. But I will tell you this. I can't be more prouder of a player than Chandler Jones. The way he came off of the bicep injury, he came to camp in probably the best shape of his career. Really lean. You can see it in his play, his explosiveness, his first step, his repertoire of pass rush moves. Came back with a vengeance and really excited about where he's at and looking forward to a huge year from him.
All right, let me ask you this thing, because he did rub your pockets, which obviously means, you know, pay the man his money. Are you open to getting something with Chandler Jones done before he would hit, next year and be available for the franchise tag? Would you like to get a deal done with him sooner than that?
Easy question. Number one, to answer the first part, he's rubbing the wrong pockets. And number two, I would say this, we're not in the business of moving on and getting rid of good football players. So that's a pretty easy answer.
I want to follow up with one about Chandler Jones, and then we'll move on. And with each performance, which is as good as he was last week with the Defensive Player of the Week award, does that add any level of urgency on your side to get something done? There's just so much conversation about it. Does that change any part of the equation for you when it comes to Chandler?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you always want to get good players under contract. But as you know, there's always a million different moving parts. And I have to continue to look at this roster moving forward, generally from a three-year standpoint. But, you know, again, there's so many moving parts to it all. But, again, to answer your question, we certainly want to keep good players under contract.
Steve Keim, general manager of the Cardinals, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, let's talk about that defense as a whole. From your perspective, what did you like about how well they played against Tennessee?
They played fast. They played physical. They played downhill. I think one of the things that we've talked about this offseason are all the new additions. And I think when you look at the team as a whole, offensively, defensively, special teams, and we talked about the leadership, the physicality that we added, the one thing I think that maybe isn't talked about enough is to have sustainable success, you have to have contributors that are in their first 2, 3, 4 years. And if you look at our team and you look at guys like Jalen Thompson, Isaiah Simmons, Rashard Lawrence, Lucky Fotu, Zach Allen, and I can go down the list, Byron Murphy, you know, guys that are having success early on in their careers is a huge benefit for us. And certainly a credit to the job our coaching staff has done developing these players and putting them in positions to succeed.
Isaiah Simmons was your second best player opposite Chandler Jones. He was phenomenal. Bunch of different positions. He was playing, you know, linebacker. He was playing some cornerback. So you moved him around quite a bit throughout the game. But what are you seeing? The difference between Isaiah Simmons this time last year and Isaiah Simmons right now?
Well, I mean, I think Gambo, the fact that he had an off season was huge, and that comes, with time on the job, is decisiveness, just your ability to read, react quickly, and then to use his athleticism and not have to think so much. We always knew that he was a tremendous athlete with his length and his movement skills, but now all of a sudden, you know, a guy who we already knew was smart, but you have to have some time on the job to acquire that experience and to be able to take it to the next level. And obviously, in week one, we feel like that he is heading in that direction.
You know, I saw two cornerbacks drafted in the first round down last year struggle in Jeff Okuda and then Henderson. Both of those guys had their growing pains last year. I see Marco Wilson come in and cover Julio Jones like he's a 10-year veteran. I mean, it was just unbelievable watching him play. You drafted him fourth round. I think you had a much higher grade on him. But give me your thoughts on his ability to come into that environment and play so well right from the get-go.
Yeah, you know, we traded up to get him because the grades were so big and had a lot of confidence in him throughout the evaluation process. And then that sort of carried on into the offseason. You know, when we got him here and we were able to work with him in person. And every day he continued to stack good days of practice and build confidence within our building. And it was one of those deals that, okay, now let's see what he can do when the lights come on. And obviously he did not disappoint. You know, he was physical. He was fast. He did a great job in coverage. He's got very good anticipation skills, understands zone and man concepts. So the things that he does, you know, as a rookie has been extremely exciting and feel like, again, he'll just continue to grow through experience.
Steve Keim, general manager of the Cardinals, our guest here on Burns and Gambo. From your perspective, was that, and I don't mean anything disrespectfully by this at all, was that more of the same from Kyler, or is there an evolution to him that you saw in game one against Tennessee?
I don't think there's any doubt that the game is continuing to slow down for him. And I think that's the goal in mind all along is you draft a guy like him who has got rare and unusual talent. And early on in his career, I think he had success with his skill set. And now you see a guy who's continuing to play more football, develop, see more things defensively that he understands that aren't new to him. So I think the game has slowed down, and last week was a good example of that. I think he's done a great job in the offseason of studying, getting acclimated with his new teammates. And I can't say enough good things about the way he's approached the game and from a professional standpoint.
Has the addition or the movement of Christian Kirk and Rondale Moore into the slot, does that allow Kliff to make this offense more of what he wants it to be, given what they can do out of that spot?
I don't think there's any question. I mean, when you look at guys like that, and again, the goal in this business is to cater to player strengths, and both of those players, whether it's their size and their movement skills and their ability to run routes with explosiveness, you know, you'd like to have them inside, and that's where they can flourish. Not to say that they can't play outside, but I think that Kliff's done a great job, and again, you know, when you look at the first week, you know, the things that Kliff Kingsbury did as our head coach and the way he called plays and the tempo and the balance, you know, I thought was exceptional.
Steve, you were an offensive lineman, so I mean, I have to talk about Rodney Hudson. I mean, he's 20 yards down the field blowing up safeties on a swing pass to Rondale Moore, setting up a touchdown. I mean, just the difference from, you know, having a guy that struggled at that position last year to perhaps having the best center in the league. How much of a difference is that making on Kyler?
It's unbelievable. He has truly solidified our offensive line. Again, all the pre-snap stuff, the guy is extremely intelligent. He doesn't make mistakes. He's physical. He's athletic. He's, you know, at his age, he's still playing at a very, very high level. And I agree with you. I'd like to see a better center in the National Football League. So extremely high on Rodney, what he's brought to the table. And again, you know, anytime that you bring in players like that to a locker room that you're already excited about, you know, that confidence permeates through the room and obviously the offensive side of the ball.
Last year, you guys, you know, you lined Hopkins up a lot on the left. It's easy. It's an easy read for Kyler. It's one-on-one. He doesn't have to read a whole lot. He doesn't have a guy crossing the field where he's got to pick up a nickel guy or a linebacker or, you know, a safety coming up. He doesn't have to read a whole lot. This year, we were looking to see if Kyler was going to be able to go through the reads and the progressions. Did you see any of that in week one?
I did, you know, and again, that's the evolution that we talked about earlier is game slowing down, being able to go through your progression, secondary, third options, whatever it may be, understanding coverages a little better, all those things that, again, young quarterbacks have to do to grow in this business. And I think he did a great job. And you know, again, these guys are continuing to play more. We didn't have an offseason last year. Now they're playing together. We've added more talent. We've added more weapons. And I think you'll continue to see growth out of this offense. And I really think, you know, the sky's the limit. I think there's a lot of different things that we can do to keep people off balance and you know, excited about the challenge this week. You know, Mike Zimmer is a great coach, and obviously has a great scheme and understands concepts. So it'll be a big challenge.
A home opener for the first time in nearly 20 years without number 11. Weird, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a guy that we certainly miss every day, but, you know, somebody that we're proud of. And, it's, you know, again, for me, awfully proud that my career has crossed paths with his and consider him a great friend.
Patrick Peterson's return as well. 8-time Pro Bowler, did a lot of good things while he was here, struggled, and, you know, obviously there's some animosity between him and the organization. How do you view him coming back to Arizona?
Well, it's like anything in this business. You know, I think the one thing that I would say is if you want to win a popularity contest, don't become a general manager in a National Football League. It's, you know, after about a month on the job in 2013, I had to cut one of my best friends in life, and Adrian Wilson, a guy who was in the Ring of Honor and, you know, many of Cardinal fans' favorite players. Who works for us now. So, you know, we have to make tough decisions. Sometimes business decisions become personal. It's unfortunate, but, you know, we're excited to get back out to the stadium. It's going to be a packed house. Excited to see all the red and obviously the game day experience that State Farm Stadium has to offer.
Appreciate the time as always, Steve. Good luck this weekend. We'll talk next Friday. Thank you.
Talk soon, man.
Steve Keim here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You can text us your thoughts on what he had to say. The FanDuel text line, it's always open and available to you at 620-620 right now. And as always, we'll read the best ones on the air. When we come back, we're going to react to some of the things Steve said, in particular about Chandler Jones and just about how much there was to like about the Cardinals' season opening win. That's coming up on Burns and Gambo. Thanks again to Steve Keim for joining us. You can count on that every Friday at 3 o'clock here at Burns and Gambo. We'll talk with the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals. We were under orders from Chandler Jones. Okay, maybe that's a little strong, but Chandler did say when he met with the media on Wednesday, yes, I can confirm I asked for a trade, and if you want to talk any more about it, you can go ask my agent or you can go ask Steve. So we did. We asked Steve, and here's what Steve said about it.
I appreciate the question. I mean, I would say the one thing, and I've always sort of dealt with business this way, is any conversation with our players and their specific agents remains confidential. But I will tell you this. I can't be more proud of a player than Chandler Jones. The way he came off of the bicep injury, he came to camp in probably the best shape of his career. Really lean. You can see it in his play, his explosiveness, his first step, his repertoire of pass rush moves. Came back with a vengeance and really excited about where he's at and looking forward to a huge year from him.
Follow up from Gambo. Do you want to re-sign Chandler Jones before next season starts?
Easy question. Number one, to answer the first part, he's rubbing the wrong pockets. And number two, I would say this: we're not in the business of moving on and getting rid of good football players. So that's a pretty easy answer.
All right, easy answer. So yes, the answer is yes. They would like to get a deal done with Chandler Jones before the season, which means let's go grand scheme here. They prefer not to franchise tag him next year.
Yeah.
Chandler Jones is playing for the Arizona Cardinals next year. He's playing for the Cardinals. Now, whether it's franchise tag or a 3-year deal, I don't know what it's going to be, but you could tell from Steve Keim, easy answer. They prefer to get a deal done rather than run into the franchise tag.
The padding of the pockets, by the way, was the
reference. That was a good line.
To
yeah.
The Cameron Cox from Channel 12, the video that he tweeted out of Chandler Jones jokingly going up to Steve Keim on the sideline near the end of that Titans game and kind of patting down his pockets, you know, looking for his wallet, looking for the money. And that's why Steve said he's patting down the wrong pockets. He needs to go pat down Michael Bidwell, which Chandler vehemently denied doing. He said it was just Steve. As far as Chandler and how he's playing, does that add any urgency to get this done as quickly as possible?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you always want to get good players under contract. But as you know, there's always a million different moving parts. And I have to continue to look at this roster moving forward, generally from a three-year standpoint. But, you know, again, there's so many moving parts to it all. But, again, to answer your question, we certainly want to keep good players under contract.
And once again, financially, there's a huge advantage to not tagging him and signing him to a 3 or 4 year deal where you can spread out that money earned over the three, because a 1 year salary cap hit on a franchise tag, you're talking about a $20 to $25 million hit for one guy.
Yeah, I was pretty confident. We talked about this the other day, and I was pretty confident when we were like, what's going to happen? Franchise tag or get a deal done? I'm pretty confident they'll get a deal done. But remember, it takes two to do a deal. It takes two. What does Chandler Jones expect on a contract? What does he want? Does he want Cameron Jordan money? Does he want does he want money like he's 27 years old? Does he want T.J. Watt money?
I was going to say, I hope he doesn't want T.J. Watt money, because he's
like
not going to get it.
5 year age difference there. 4 years is a lot of age. Is a big age difference there. Guys that are Chandler's age rarely get paid a lot of money. They'll get paid a lot, but not like you do when you're 25 or 26 years old. You're just not going to get that money at 31 that you would have gotten in your mid-20s or even late 20s. So he'll get paid. I think you're looking at a 3 year deal for 50-something million dollars with maybe 40-something of it guaranteed. I think that's probably what you're looking at would be realistic. Maybe a little bit more. I mean, maybe it's a little bit more. But I do think a deal probably gets done sometimes before the season ends.
Steve also spoke about a couple of players who were seeing them kind of evolve right before our very eyes. One of them is Isaiah Simmons.
The fact that he had an offseason was huge. And that comes, with time on the job, is decisiveness, just your ability to read, react quickly, and then to use his athleticism and not have to think so much. We always knew that he was a tremendous athlete with his length and his movement skills, but now all of a sudden, you know, a guy who we already knew was smart, but you have to have some time on the job to acquire that experience and to be able to take it to the next level. And obviously in week one, we feel like that he is heading in that direction.
That was Steve on Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah. I thought he was second best player besides Chandler Jones on that defense. He just stood out. And they moved him all around, right? We talked about he's at the linebacker. He's at the cornerback spot. He's just, you moved him around enough. What did we say? He had 17 total snaps at cornerback, I think we said.
That. Most of them in the slot, a couple of them on the outside.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, just to have that, right?
Sure.
To have that luxury. I've got a guy that's not a cornerback, but I can play him a cornerback and he can hold up fine. You know, for 10, 15, 20 snaps, he'll be fine. And so they had that. So he was almost like their fourth cornerback at times.
It is a Football Friday here on the Burns and Gambo Show. That means you're down to your one last chance to win tickets. It's a Sunday's Cardinals home opener. We'll call out the last name of the week coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo talk Diamondbacks baseball with a D-backs broadcaster, The Booth.
It's a fact check. I'm back. You're back. We're back. It's a fact.
Presented by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, the official wine of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, we're back.
Every Friday, we're talking D-backs baseball with one member of their broadcast team. And joining us right now, he is the host for Diamondbacks Radio. He is a host on MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM. He's our guy, Mike Farron. He joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Mike, hope you're well. Thanks for coming on for a few. We appreciate it.
A pleasure to be with you, gentlemen.
Diamondbacks can't have nice things, apparently. Seth Beer comes up. We're all excited to watch him play, and he pops his shoulder out diving for a ball, and they put him on the injured list today. They can't have nice things, Mike.
It just seems like every time you think things are starting to move in your direction, the boulder rolls back in Sisyphus's face, right? So, we talked to Torrey just a little bit ago, and they're getting some additional imaging read on it, but didn't seem like it was going to be a thing for a day or two. I think it sounded like he was still hopeful that maybe before the end of the season he would come back, because I guess they can retro it to Wednesday. So, you know, it's a bummer. I mean, he had swung the bat well in those first three games worth of at-bats, and so I was excited to watch him compete. But, like you said, that's one of those years, Dave.
Yeah, I'll tell you another thing is just watching these Dodger games, man. The Dodgers just have owned the Diamondbacks this year. So is the NL West, but I don't think we've seen the difference between these two teams be greater in a long time. I mean, you can just see how far ahead the Dodgers are compared to the D-backs right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can make that comparison with the Giants, too. I mean, I think that and, you know, listen, like the Giants are doing it with a lot of veteran guys, and their farm system has gotten deeper and better very, very quickly. So they have some impactful guys that are maybe a couple years away, but you know, it's a scary organization to think of because they don't have a whole lot of long-term salary commitments, and you know, they always have played in the deep end of the pool too. So yeah, I mean, I think you know, between the velocity from some of the Dodgers guys, I think, you know, in fact, I'll give you a little hint on talking to Torrey tonight, where we're talking some about Dodgers, Astros, Giants approaches and the way that those guys just don't chase pitches out of the zone, but hammer the pitches in it. And the Diamondbacks have the don't chase part down pretty well. I mean, if you look at their chase rates compared to the league, it's actually pretty good. They just aren't hammering the pitches in the strike zone yet. And I think some of it is young players getting adjusted. And I think you're right. You're going to see some continued adjustment in personnel over the next couple of years to try and catch LA and San Francisco.
One last quick question on beer. Knowing that, you know, there's a CBA to be negotiated and all that stuff, do you anticipate that he's there basically DH next year if that comes to pass across all of Major League Baseball, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say based on three Major League games, right? I mean, I think that's been the assumption that if in the collective bargaining agreement there is a designated hitter in the NL, that at least as far as the Diamondbacks go, that Beer would be a front runner for that position because he has been, while he's worked very hard to improve defensively, he still has some work to do at first base. And so I think it's reasonable to think that that's the case. But very rarely do you see a young player come up right away and get thrust into that designated hitter role and left there. And, you know, like maybe the one example of it that I can think of at least recently is Yordan Alvarez, who has that role with the Astros. So I don't know. And I also don't know, you know, like, let's say he has a good spring and he goes, he breaks camp next year and they do have a DH and he struggles a little bit early. Like, are you looking to fill that role from some other spots too? I mean, I think depth is always a good thing when you have young players, but
sure.
I think there's that possibility that if there's a DH that he would be a leading candidate for.
Right. More with Mike in just a minute. It is 3:35 in the afternoon, which means it's time for us to announce our return of the Red Sea winner, Sierra Helvig from Tonopah. You have 10 minutes to call us at 602-260-9870 to get your tickets to the Arizona Cardinals home opener, qualify for the autographed Kyler Murray jersey. If we don't hear from Sierra within 10 minutes, then we're going to open up the phone lines to somebody else. So if you didn't hear your name, you can still win. Text Red C to 620-620. But for now, Sierra Helvig from Tonopah, you are on the clock. 10 minutes to call, 602-260-9870. 9870.
Mike, hey, I always like to pay attention to former Diamondbacks and see how they're doing. But man, I'll tell you nothing. I don't know if it pisses me off or it just frustrates me, but to see what Robbie Ray is doing this year, he's going to win the Cy Young Award. He's basically a two-pitch pitcher now. For years, we watched this guy go five innings, 107 pitches, five walks, 10 strikeouts, and it was frustrating. They let him go, and here he is a year later. He's going to win the damn Cy Young Award.
Yeah, so, and I get the frustration. I mean, I think Gerrit Cole still is in that mix there, too. But Robbie obviously has had a tremendous year. And, you know, we were actually talking a little bit about this on the Sirius show the other day after he had his 13 punch-out outing, or his most recent one. I think he's done it three times this year now. Something happened that clicked with him and clearly with Pete Walker, who's the pitching coach in Toronto, that allowed them to get him on time more in his delivery. And I think it is a little bit of a turn is what it might look like in his delivery. And that's allowed everything to sync up, because really that's what the issue always was with Robbie. And he talked about that, was trying to find the right timing mechanism to get everything to line up. And make it work. And, you know, like for some people, it was like, you know, Randy Johnson talks about it, right? He used to land on his heel, right? And then when he started landing on the ball of his foot, you know, that was what opened it up for him. And maybe it was that little turn. And yeah, it's frustrating to see it, because we knew that Robbie had the potential to be a very, very good, consistent major league starting pitcher. We just didn't see the consistency. I understand the frustration, and I'm sure Robbie was frustrated with his performance too, but you know, he's a good dude too. And so I'm happy for him that he's had the success that he has. It's just disappointing that it didn't happen in a Diamondbacks uniform as consistently as it has this year.
I'm trying to pay attention to what's going on around baseball. I know there is a very big series tonight in the National League when it comes to the St. Louis Cardinals, who now, I was actually at a Cardinals game a month ago, and God bless those fans. They're some of the best in Major League Baseball, but there was kind of this feeling that they're just wasn't, you know, there was really nothing to watch, that they were done and they weren't going to make a big play. And then they just went on, they got on fire. Now they've got the Padres tonight. They're separated by, what, a half game, I think, for the final wild card spot in the National League. I mean, I know Diamondbacks baseball has not provided all the thrills that we're hoping, but if you're a baseball fan and you're looking for meaningful September baseball, there is some of that coming up tonight between San Diego and St. Louis.
Yeah, and I think Jason Stark pointed it out the other day that on August 10th, the Cardinals were 8.5 games out of the wild card, and they're now a half game ahead of Cincinnati and a game in front of San Diego for it. And I think longtime followers of baseball at any level who've watched the Cardinals are accustomed to Cardinals devil magic, which is certainly what it feels like from the outside, right? But their bullpen, which had a lot of big arms, walked a ton of guys in the first half of the season, and they're still not like extreme strike throwers, although they've gotten help from guys like TJ McFarland who've come in and done a really nice job for them, but they're in the strike zone a little bit more and taking advantage of that velocity. Goldschmidt has had a very good year for them. Arenado has gotten hot lately. I think both of them have had solid seasons, and then, you know, add in the fact that Tyler O'Neill has had a strong year.
Wainwright continues in between to them. Pitch
and,
well.
Yeah, Waino's going to pitch tomorrow against Darvish in what's a big series as well. And, you know, they've done a lot of this without their best starting pitcher in Jack Flaherty, too. So I think it's pretty impressive. And, you know, listen, San Diego's starters for the series are Vince Velasquez, who was released last week by the Phillies, Yu Darvish, who has an ERA of 8 and who the Diamondbacks have throttled twice in the second half, and Jake Arrieta, who was released by the Cubs in August. So, like, it's not exactly like San Diego's walking in with the advantage in the pitching matchups either. I think it's going to be a great series. Those two met in the wild card round of the playoffs last year. They played a very, very tight, tense three-game set. It's important, but here's the thing. San Diego's schedule is really tough. They don't play any sub-500 teams the rest of the way. They are going to have a lot of challenges, and they're going to have to really earn it if they're going to get that second wild card.
Let me would have thought on Madison Bumgarner. We had seen him, you know, kind of get back to pitching the way we expected him to, but these last three or four outings, it seems like, I don't know if he's wearing down as the season goes on, but we've seen a lot of struggles, a lot of five runs over five innings mm-hmm. given up by Mad Bum. Do you see signs of him slowing down right now?
You know, I don't know. I mean, there were a couple that were particularly rough, I think, in the middle there. You know, yesterday, he got beat by a couple of, you know, misplaced changeups in the middle of the zone. I mean, that's his fourth pitch, and we can debate the effectiveness of using it, but he has relied on it more in the second half, even in that run when he was really good for a month after he came off the injured list. So I think some of it is just adjustments that he's going to have to go through. I think he has, you know, I think what you saw from like mid-July to mid-August in that 5 or 6 start stretch was what he's going to be capable of. I mean, the really good pitchers make adjustments. I mean, John, I know you're a big Yankees fan. Like, you saw it with CeCe, right? Like, sure. Sabathia made those adjustments late in his career. Hell, you mentioned Wainwright. Like, Waino has made that adjustment late in his career. Bumgarner's competitive, smart. I think he's in the process of making that adjustment. So I think there's probably going to be a few more fits and starts right now. But I think he's got enough weapons at his disposal to be an effective starter, if not a guy that's anchoring a rotation. So I think, you know, I'm curious to see how he throws tonight. This is a tough test against the Houston offense always, but I'm very, very curious to see how he attacks their right-handed hitters tonight and what kind of success he has against them.
Good stuff, Mike. As always, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming on for a few. Stay well, okay?
Yep, you guys too. Take care.
All right, Mike.
Mike Farron joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Mike, by the way, is not going to be able to qualify for those tickets because Sierra Helvig from Tonopah became our very final winner
of
the Return to the Red Sea contest. Winning those tickets, calling in with well within the 10 minutes to be able to go to Sunday's game. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, Jaden Daniels' running ability is part of the reason why he's so dangerous. Is he running the ball too much? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Big weekend for ASU football tomorrow night, 7:15 kickoff. I believe it's on ESPN. I know it's on one of the ESPN networks. I think it's on main ESPN tomorrow.
Can we find out what they're made of?
Yeah,
we are. Let's find out. I want to know what they're made of. I want to know right now. Tomorrow. I don't want to wait anymore. I don't know what they are. I got two games. I don't know what they are. They played two garbage teams. They kind of struggled for a while, then eventually overpowered them. Now you take it on a BYU team that's starting to think that they've got a clear path to maybe make it to a New Year's Six game if they get by ASU. I mean, there's a lot of talk in you know, in Provo about their schedule and how they got, boy, the schedule really plays well for BYU. They got a lot of home games. They got a lot of games that they should be able to, you know, you look at their opponents and they're talking about, you know, their home games. They had Utah, they won. They got Arizona State. If they win that, then they get Boise State and Virginia at home. On the road, they got to play Baylor. They're not that good. Washington State, they're not that good. Georgia Southern and USC, which just fired their coach. So, you know, there's a lot of talk in Provo that get by this Arizona State game and they got a path, not a clear path, but they've got a path to maybe make it to one of those New Year's Six bowl games.
Yeah, and you can see the path, right? And you can you start to look around at the other group of five schools that could potentially challenge them in the rankings and where they're ranked now and how much of a bump they might get from those other teams. It's a schedule. The big one to me is kind of USC, just because you don't know, you know, that's Saturday, November 27th. That's the last game BYU plays. And you don't know by then what is. I know USC just fired their coach now. They're not very good now. But under a new guy, the interim guy, do they play harder? How long does that last? Does he stumble on some kind of formula to get them play better? I mean, because at home, they're going to be great. On the road, we'll see. But there is definitely a path that I could look. We've been talking about this all week. BYU is very high on itself right now, and deservedly so. They just got into the Big 12. They're 2-0 against the Pac-12. They're trying to become 3-0. This is a good time to feel good about yourself if you're BYU. They're going to feel great about themselves if they beat ASU on Saturday night.
Sure.
And they're 3-0 in the Pac-12.
Yeah, and if you're ASU and you lose that football game, it doesn't take you out of winning the Pac-12 South or even getting to the Rose Bowl, but it just becomes really hard. Like, it just because I think the belief in the team's not going to be there. To me, and I'm going to continue to say this, ASU should win this football game. They're better. They're more talented. They've got more speed. Now, you got to handle a raucous crowd on the road. They're going to be going nuts because of, you know, the Big 12, and they just beat Utah for the first time. They had lost 9 straight to the Utes, and they won that game. So I understand how sky-high they are. But I still think that ASU is a better football team, and they've got more speed, and I think that they win the game, and I think they win it by double digits.
We had Chris Cartman on the show yesterday. He's from SunDevilSource.com, and I went to their website today looking for kind of inspiration of different ways to talk about this game, and I kind of stumbled on this one, and I thought it was really interesting. This belief that, and you even asked him about Jaden Daniels yesterday, this belief that maybe Jaden Daniels is just running too much and not being a balanced quarterback. Herm Edwards, after the UNLV game, in which he ran for 128 yards against the Rebels, thought that Jaden ran the football too much.
Jaden, because, you know, when he sees daylight, he just feels like, well, hey, I can go make a first down. And obviously he did that numerous times. But I just think it's more of him maybe spending a little bit more time in there and not taking off so fast, you know. But that's easy for me to say. I don't have 4 guys running after me, right? I'm standing on the sideline where it's safe. But we got to be careful. You know, 13, you ran 13 times. That's too much.
Zach Hill, their OC, has said they want to throw about 55% of the time. He's attempting a pass about 32% of the time.
Ouch. You know, and all that talk, I mean, like, oh, he had this big night for Jaden Daniels. He had a running the ball, and, you know, he was the difference maker and everything. He played UNLV. He had to rush for 122 yards and against UNLV. Shouldn't have to run for any yards against UNLV. It's UNLV.
Yeah.
They've had one winning season in 20-something years. You shouldn't have to sit in the pocket and wait and get protection and find a guy open. I understand what everybody's talking about. He's running the ball too much.
Yeah, ASU, 11th in the Pac-12 in passing yards so far. Here's Jordan Simone, sideline reporter for ASU. He was on Bickley and Murata today. Thinks Jaden Daniels has been, quite frankly, average so far this year.
It's not where I've wanted to see it. I'd give him a C, if I'm being honest with you guys. I think he's come out and there's this thing that happens with guys when they get success in college football. And I know because it happened to me. It's when you stop doing the little things and you're focused on what other people are doing. You know, maybe you're a captain, you're a leader of the team, and you're worried about, you know, what the linebacker's doing. For Jaden's case, you know, he might be worried about where the running back's lined up, receivers, you know, offensive line, which way are they moving. No, just worry about yourself. Go through your reads and do what you've done to get you to this point. And so I think he's been rushing to get the ball out, and if not, he just takes off and runs. He's not going through his progressions as well as I'd like to see him.
That's going to have to change. if they're going to have the kind of season that you think they could have, that we all think they could have, not just you. I mean, Jaden Daniels can't be a one-dimensional, I look, my guy's covered, I'm going to take off and run. And as Herm said, it's easy for me to say, I don't have four dudes chasing after me either. But that's what being quarterback of a big-time program is all about. We've got to find out if Jaden Daniels has that balance or not.
He's got a good completion percentage. I think it's like 73%. But you're talking about two games. I got taken out early in the first one, Southern Utah. But he's got two touchdown passes in two games.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he's a good football player. He's a talented football player. But there's more that they should be able to get out of him.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more that they should get. When we saw Jaden Daniels, we were thinking, listen, there's been a lot of good quarterbacks that ASU's had. You know, they've had a lot of great. Andrew Walter and Rudy Carpenter and Jake Plummer. They've had a lot of good quarterbacks. This is a kid that you thought that was going to be in that top echelon of quarterbacks. I haven't seen it. He's not there for me. Now, maybe he does. Maybe he gets there. And this is the game. Like, those other two games, for whatever reason, like, they didn't start strong. The first game was all the penalties, and this other game, it was just these two big drives that UNLV had. They finished strong, but they didn't start strong. But it'd be nice to see them play a complete game against BYU.
Yeah, it would, and it would be nice, and you're absolutely right about Jaden Daniels. There was an expectation that he was going to be the next great one. I remember at the beginning of his career, his freshman year, wondering, is ASU only going to get 3 years out of Jaden Daniels?
Right.
Is he going to be so good that the pros are going to come knocking on his door and they're only going to get 3 years out of him? Now, you know, now I it's about his evolution, about his development, whether he grows into being that kind of quarterback. And so far, no, we haven't. And I think last year really stymied his growth. I think only being able to play in the four games really might have set him back in terms of that curve and that development. But that's tough, you know. That's an excuse now that you just doesn't. Okay, you've got a full-size regular season in front of you. Go make the most of it. It would be great if he could start this week against BYU. Show that whole well-rounded game against BYU, because just running the ball home, I don't know if that gets it done against BYU. I think they need more than that this weekend.
Yeah, like I said, he's been good. He's just hasn't been great. And if you want to win the Pac-12 South, and you want to, he's going to have to show greatness that we haven't seen in these last couple of years.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Cardinals defense gave Ryan Tannehill headaches all day long. What kind of challenge does Kirk Cousins present with the Titans in here, or with the Vikings in here, I should say? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.